the five things that, in my opinion, you should consistently do when you lure fishing. All five of those stages of the retrieve are equal as important, and you should always do them.
G'day and welcome to another instalment of the Fly Fishers podcast.
Since 1967, we've been spreading the bug of fly fishing at our Melbourne fly shop.
Join us as we celebrate the fun of fly fishing and chat with characters that enjoy it as much as we do.
Whether you're just starting out or have some experience, we hope our ego-free commentary helps demystify fly fishing and inspires you to visit new places and try new techniques.
Welcome to another episode of the Fly Fishers podcast. Today we're joined by Craig Coltman. Craig, you're not a stranger to this podcast. We've had you on once before. Welcome back.
Exactly. Hey, I got a repeat performance. Hey.
He's a sucker for punishment, folks. But today we're going to be talking about pulling wets. So this is, I guess, a technique that is unbelievably effective. Is that right, Craig?
There is. Yeah, look, it looks very simple, but at the end of the day, there is a lot of technique in it, and it can be an incredibly effective way to catch fish, particularly when there's nothing visibly going on.
You know? Yeah.
When we would all love to go out and have a perfect day where the mayfly are hatching and the fish are feeding off the surface, but of course, that's what we're all looking for. But the reality is, most of the time, that's not what's going on. So sure. You've got to go subsurface if you want to catch fish.
Okay. So what you're saying is really you just got to think about what the fish are doing, and quite often they are down deeper in a more aggressive sort of state, feeding on things that are actually moving away from them.
Yeah. So effectively when you're pulling, that you're actually, there's two things going on. One, you're actually, I guess, delivering your fly to where the fish are actually feeding, which is obviously at depth. But also you're tapping into not just their feeding behaviour, but also the aggressive and inquisitive nature of fish.
Okay.
So they may see your fly, and people think that flies are taken purely because they're imitating a food source for the fish. That's one of the reasons why they're taken. But the other reasons why they're taken is because the fish is inquisitive. The only way he can investigate something is to look at it or stick it in his mouth.
Okay.
So he sees your fly, he's inquisitive, he puts it in his mouth. The other thing, of course, is aggression.
Yeah.
And that particularly comes into play late in the season and early in the new season, if you like, where pre and post-spawning, the fish are more aggressive. They're more just to say, it's in my space, I'm going to kill it.
Mm.
So they take for all those three reasons is one of the reasons why they're going to take your pull fly.
Yeah. How do you feel about some folks that might call pulling streamers just lure fishing?
Yeah, well, it's probably they're not really appreciating the technique that is involved.
Okay.
And I'd say, if you, for example, were to take one of our state or national or international competitions where a lot of pulling could occur, if it was just a matter of chucking it out and pulling it in, why is it that the same anglers always seem to do consistently well and the other ones don't? It's because they understand the subtleties and the technique that's involved in that style of fishing.
Okay, so would you say that us with a fly rod and a fly, and we can do a whole lot more with the way that we present our lure slash streamer than the lure fisherman can?
Well, yeah, I think the what we've got going for us as fly fishermen is that we don't have a big, heavy lure.
Mm.
Yeah, we can deliver something which is either unweighted or very lightly weighted, which means we can actually have more control over how that's behaving in the water. Yeah, if I'm dragging a Tassie Devil around, let's say, and I stop, it's going to sink like a brick, isn't it? It'll flutter on the way down, and yes, a fish could take it. But a fly is going to actually descend in the water in a far more subtle or controlled way than a heavy lure that's been cast out. So you can control, I suppose, the way you're fishing it a lot more, which sort of gets us to, I guess, the five things that, in my opinion, you should consistently do when you lure fishing.
Yeah.
And these are equally whether you're fishing off the bank or whether you're fishing out of the boat. So I'll name them all and then we'll maybe talk about them in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, that'd be great.
First is the plop.
Yeah.
Then you've got the drop. Then you've got the retrieve. You've got the hang and you've got the lift. And all five of those stages of the retrieve are equal as important, and you should always do them.
Right.
Sometimes you'll find that one particular stage will work better one day than the other, but it should just become second nature for you to automatically do these five things. So by the plop, I mean, you want your line and the fly landing on the water gently and the fly going in with a nice enticing little plop.
Right.
If it crashes on the water, it's a disaster, really.
Sure.
So a plop, the fish will feel it through its lateral line and they'll come over to investigate.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll get a hit almost the instant the fly hits the water because the fish has come over to investigate. So nice little plop, they come in, crash, the opposite, you scare the fish away.
Right.
So that's number one.
Yeah.
And again, that's something we can do with a fly that you're not necessarily going to be able to do with a lure, is it?
Yeah.
That's going to hit the water a lot harder.
Yeah, yeah.
So number two is the drop. So, okay, we've hit the plop, but now the fly is going to sink in the water column.
Yeah.
Now, it's very important to keep in contact with your fly. So I tend to do a very slow figure of eight retrieve just to make sure I'm right in contact with that fly.
Yeah.
If you're in a boat that's drifting, obviously you may have to go a little bit faster. So you're dead straight, pointing your rod straight down the line. You're feeling for anything. And I tend to go down in counts of five. So first time in, it'll be 5, 10, 15, 20, so forth and so on. And the length of time you do that for will depend, well, number one, where the fish are sitting, how deep they are, but obviously the amount of weight in your fly, the amount of the depth of water you're fishing in, and the amount of weed, and of course, in a drifting boat sense too, how fast the boat is drifting.
Right.
So you need to allow for all of that.
Sure.
But eventually you'll think, okay, the fish are sitting at about, say, a count of 15. So that's what you'll start to consistently do.
Yeah.
So that second is the drop. Then you've got the retrieve. Now, of course, there's a range of different retrieves you can do, from very slow figure of eights to flat-out roly-poling. As a general rule for trout, I like a smooth retrieve, not a jerky retrieve like you would use, say, for brim or estuary perch or whatever. I like long strips and bringing my hand right in behind my back. So I've got big, long strips, and quite fast. Most anglers, I find, fish too slow.
Right? Okay.
Get the fish's attention, force the fish into making a decision.
Yeah.
Right? If the fly's going fast, he gets his attention, and it doesn't give him too long to investigate the fly. He's got to grab it.
Sure.
Equally, roly-poly.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons why roly-polies are so effective is because you've got that constant retrieve.
Okay.
The fly's just coming along constantly in the water. There's no stops or starts.
Yeah.
It's constantly coming.
Okay.
So normally, particularly so when I'm guiding a millbrook or whatever, and we may be fishing lures at times, inevitably I find people are fishing too slow.
Yeah.
I'm always saying, no, speed up, go faster, longer strips.
Okay.
So I'd say as a general rule, if in doubt, fish faster, don't fish slower.
Yeah.
Now, we're fishing nymphs and stuff, that's different, but when we're pulling lures, you want to go faster.
Yeah. So you think that either the fly gets their attention or it doesn't, you know, and...
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And and often actually, particularly say if you're fishing off the bank, you'll find that you will catch a fish very quickly, within the first three or four casts.
Yeah.
So if I'm off the bank, I like to keep moving. I'll put in, say, five casts, stand around, nothing there, keep going.
Right.
Because if the fish is there and if he's of mind to take it, you'll get him in the first five casts.
Sure. If you're fishing in that method, something that just springs into my mind is the drop all of a sudden, because you've covered that area and you've moved on, you probably haven't had enough of a chance to actually work out the drop, that count to get it into that area where the fish are. Is there a little bit of a guess as to what sort of depth you're getting to, and or is it the fact that you're shore based, slightly shallow water, and so wherever you are within a pretty wide margin, you've probably got the attention of the fish.
Yeah. So when you're fishing off the bank, unless you happen to be fishing off a dam wall or something like that, normally you don't have as much of a depth of water to play with.
Okay.
So whilst the drop's still important, you're not going to be counting to 30.
No.
Because your fly would be hung up on the bottom. So you're probably only at maximum, you'd have a count of about 10 before you'd start retrieving.
Okay.
So it's important, but it's, you don't have the same spectrum of depth to deal with.
Sure.
As you may have if you're fishing out of the boat, depending on, you know, the piece of water that you're fishing.
Yep.
So, yeah, so when obviously if you're boat fishing, you're drifting, so you're always covering fresh water. But if you're fishing off the bank, again, I like to fish quite quickly. And you can always come back to the spot, of course, too.
Yeah, just sure.
Keep on cycling along a particular piece of bank.
Yeah. And so the next phase, we've done our retrieve.
So we've done the retrieve.
Yeah.
Then we've got the hang.
Yeah.
Now, the hang really is just a stop. So what you do is you're retrieving, and then when you've got 6 metres of line still out, so that means, say, if you're using approximately a 2.7 to 3-metre rod, then you'll have another 3 metres of line outside again. I put a little hang marker on my lines at 6 metres, so I know when that comes to hand, that means I'm 6 metres out, you just stop and let the fly fall in the water.
Right.
Now, often a fish will be following the fly but not committing.
Yeah.
That stop, that hang, is forcing the fish into doing something.
Sure.
He's either going to eat your fly or he's going to crash into it or, yeah, but it's forcing a decision.
It's crunch time.
It's crunch time, yeah. Mm. And then you let that hang. Now, that the length of time for the hang will vary depending on the amount of line, you know, depth of water you've got, how fast the boat's moving if you're in a boat. And on the location too. So, for example, if you're fishing up in Lake Eucanbeen, you hang, and this is out of a boat, you hang and hang and hang and hang and hang for as long as you possibly can because the fish there seem to like a really long hang.
Okay, yeah.
Other lakes, maybe not as long.
Yeah.
But the hang is critically important. Then finally, there's the lift.
Just on the hang, do you find you miss quite a few fish on the hang?
Not if you keep in contact.
Yeah.
But again, it's so important to be in contact with your flies. So rod tip literally right on the water.
Right.
Again, when I'm guiding, I'll say, put your rod tip in the water if you need to. It's not going to melt.
Yeah.
Because they may have their fly rod lifted 3 or 4 feet off the water, which means you're not in contact. So I like to be straight down the line, really in contact with those flies.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you shouldn't be missing them there. But yes, there is always the possibility if you're not in contact, particularly if you've got a fast moving boat. It's harder to keep in contact.
Okay. Yeah. So when you're doing that hang and you're in a fast moving boat, are you still recovering some line during that point?
Correct. So it's the same as the drop. You stop, but if the boat's moving fast, you've actually got to do a little bit of a figure of eight just to keep in contact.
Okay. Yeah.
And then finally, once we've got the hang out of the way, we're then going to lift our fly back up in the water. So we don't just rip the fly out.
Mm-hmm.
We lift up until we're seeing the fly, or should I say flies, coming through. There's nothing falling. Then normally I'll go into a roll and then back out.
Gotcha.
Because we've all had it. We've just pulled the fly off the water and there's a big boil behind our fly, isn't there?
Yeah.
So that fly ascending back up in the water, again, is a real trigger for the fish to say, oh, I'm having that.
Yeah. The hang, how much line have we got out when we might start the hang?
Yeah, so 6 metres of fly line plus your leader.
Okay.
So, again, I put my hang marker on, which is a bit of UV fly paint, that bright orange stuff.
Yeah.
I put that on 6 metres from the end of the fly line.
Okay.
So, for me, that's the marker. Some people put it at 7, but for me, I run at 6.
So a bit of a personal preference thing.
But anywhere between 6 and 7 is going to be about right for you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Is it dictated a little bit by the length of the fly rod in some way?
Possibly. I haven't really thought about
it. Limitation of being able to actually pick up only so much line that is stuck in the honey.
Yeah, so if you were fishing a shorter rod, probably you'd have a shorter hang marker.
Yeah.
So normally when I'm out of a boat, I'm fishing a 10-foot rod, a 3-metre rod. So it all just seems to work nicely at that length.
Yeah. So that's the 5 key elements of the retrieve.
And, the technique. So you just make sure you're always doing all of them. Again, some days the fish will be all over the hang.
Yeah.
Some days they're not. Doesn't matter. Just always do it.
Okay.
Because then it becomes second nature. It becomes a habit.
Yeah.
I actually nowadays can't not do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It just becomes such a habit that you go through those 5 things. Another thing that people do is the hang's working really well. halfway through your retrieve, do a hang.
Yeah.
So you haven't retrieved all the way in, you're only halfway through, hang it, stop.
Yeah.
Then retrieve again.
Start the retrieving again.
Yeah, and when it's really working well,
yeah.
Yeah, you do multiple hangs throughout a cast.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a bit more about the rods that we might use for this style of fishing. Do you have a preference or a different selection of line weight and length based on shore base and boat? Or are we talking the same sort of rod?
I actually use two different types of rods.
Yeah.
So if I'm fishing off the bank, I'm using a 9.5-foot rod.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit shorter. And the reason I use that is it helps me to cast a tighter loop. Because I'm off the bank, I may have to cast across the breeze or into the breeze. And that shorter rod helps in that situation, helps for that, I suppose, slightly faster action, slightly smaller loop.
A more penetrating cast.
Correct, yeah. So if I'm fishing out of the boat, it means that inevitably I'm fishing downwind or at least no more than across the wind, where I'll use a 10-foot rod.
Right. Okay.
So it, because 10-foot rods do give you better line control. They're better when you're fighting a fish as well, when you're playing a fish.
Yeah.
So I'd always prefer to use the 10-foot rod if I can, but it's not necessarily the correct tool for off the bank.
Sure.
So look, when the Australian team went away to Isla recently, we were lock styling, which again, it's pulling flies, but we used 9'6", 9'8" rods for that reason because we knew he might be casting into the wind at times.
Right, okay, yeah. I guess that boat style of fishing, is it the longer rod throws a more open loop
it
as
tends,
well?
Tends to throw a more open loop, but it does give you more control. So you've got the downside of a more open loop, but it doesn't matter because you're fishing downwind.
Sure.
But you get more control of your line and of the fish with that longer rod.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, we've covered rods there.
Other than the weight, I use.
Yeah.
I use a 6-weight.
Yeah. Like a fast action sort of.
Mid to fast action.
Yeah.
6-weight. And I upline everything.
Yeah. Right,
so all my lines would be 7-weights on the 6s because modern rods.
Yeah.
Actually, you've got to wonder, actually, if a rod works better with a 7 on it, why is it actually called a 6?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
We'll have to take that up with the rod manufacturers, won't we?
Yeah. Well, fortunately, the fly line companies have caught up to that now. So when you buy a 6-weight line, they're actually writing on the box, this is built one size heavy.
Yes.
So in essence, you are buying a 7-weight fly line for your 6-weight rod.
Which has confused the hell out of everything.
It has, but in a way, it's simplified it to match up or more aligned with the rod companies. So don't go buying a 7-weight line to run on your 6-weight rod because you will be, in fact, buying an 8-weight line to run on your 6-weight.
Depending on your line.
Depending on the line.
Yeah.
But the vast majority of them are overweighted in grain weight these days. So especially for the kind of recommendation in a line that we would put you onto for streamer fishing, where you are casting flies with air resistance and quite often multiple flies.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. They're all weight-forward lines too.
Yeah, yeah. Do you prefer a longer-headed line, generally speaking?
I do. For a couple of reasons, but particularly in the floating lines, because it enables me to lift or aerialise more line and lift more line off the water than if I had a short head.
Yeah.
Which means if I see a fish move, I can cover him faster.
Yeah, yeah.
And the quicker you can cover a fish, the more chance you have of catching that fish.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. It's probably less important with the sinking lines because, you know, obviously you've got to pull them in to be able to cast them back out.
Okay.
But particularly important with the floating lines.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people probably have a floating line and that sees 99% of their fishing. Can someone go out quite confidently with just a floating line and expect to be a productive stream of fishing?
Yes, you will catch fish on floating lines. And certainly at Millbrook, off the bank, we use floating lines a lot. And certainly for bank fishing, I actually only use two different lines. I use a floating line and I use a sink tip intermediate line.
Right.
And the reason I do that is because full sinking lines, when you're fishing off the bank, are a pain in the backside.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're dragging down in the water, they sink, they get tangled around your feet, they get tangled on vegetation, they just don't work very well. Mm. So I want a line that's going to float on the surface. when I'm fishing off the bank. Now, if I'm out of a boat, that's a completely different scenario. So obviously the line is falling into the boat, so I don't have those line management issues that I would have off the bank. So that's when I use full sinking lines.
Right.
And it could be anything. Again, you could still be fishing out of a boat and fishing a floating line if the fish are in very shallow water, but more often than not, I'm fishing an intermediate or a DI3 or a DI5.
Yeah.
And I carry those in both density compensated lines and sweep lines.
Sure.
And actually, I find that's an area that people really don't understand very well as to why you would use a DC line, density compensated, over a sweep. Basically, the sweep obviously goes down belly first, which means that the flies are going to get pulled through an arc in effect. So they're going to be going down and they're going to be coming up. And a fly that's descending or ascending in the water is particularly attractive to fish.
Right.
So my preference would always be to fish a sweep line if I could. But of course, I've got to have enough depth under me to get that sweep going.
Sure.
And in anything less than about 2 metres of water, sweep lines don't really work at their optimum. So
yep.
You're better off actually with a density compensator line where the line goes down straight.
Yeah.
Yep. So you have a straight line between the fly effectively and the rod tip, which means that the line's not going to be dragging in the weed or on the bottom in shallow water. So
yeah.
Pretty simply, if I'm fishing in 2 metres or less,
yeah.
I use a DC line,
yeah.
Density compensator. If I'm fishing in 2 metres or more, I'll fish a sweep line.
Right, okay.
And people I don't think have really thought that through here in Australia very much. And you'll see that in Tassie. It's funny, one of the favourite lines some of the anglers use early season pulling on penstock lagoon, for example, is a 5-weight sweep line.
Yeah.
And you'd think, well, why would that work? The reason is they pull it so fast it never gets a chance to sweep, right? It wouldn't matter. They could use either, but because they pull them so fast.
Now, when you say 5-weight, did you mean a tight 5?
Sorry, DI5.
Yep, DI5.
Sorry, slip of the tongue there. So
that'd be the like the type 5 in the belly and a type 3 in the running line and in the tip or the
That's right.
Front
of the line. So different manufacturers, some of them put the different weights into them.
Yeah.
Others, you know, just call them sweep, but effectively that's what they're doing in the line.
Sure.
So one goes down belly first, the other one goes down a straight line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that actually rules out a sweep line from the vast majority of still waters.
In a lot of situations,
yeah.
It does.
Given it's a line that is in vogue, you know, it seems to get quite a lot of press, the sweep line.
Yeah.
But it there's only a few waters that it would actually be that, you know, useful when compared to a density compensated fly line.
Correct. They're particular. Obviously, they come out of the English reservoir scene where often people are fishing in deeper water.
Right.
And you've got rainbows and you've got a lot of water daphnia, which is sitting at a certain level in the water column.
Yeah.
That'll go up and down with the light and all that sort of stuff. But effectively, you want your flies moving backwards and forwards through that column.
Right.
And that's where they're particularly useful. But, for example, if I'm fishing Yukon Beat out of a boat, I've got a bit more depth there, I'm using a sweep line.
Yeah.
If I'm fishing Woods Lake, where I've got a bit more depth, I'll be fishing a sweep line.
Bruh.
If I'm fishing Little Pine or if I'm fishing Penstock Lagoon, I'm using a density compensated line.
Yeah, good. Okay.
It's time for a short break to talk about the legends who bring this podcast to life. Our committed team at The Fly Fisher prepare, record and edit in-house in South Melbourne. We put huge effort in for you listeners. We hope that means when it comes time to make a fly fishing purchase, you consider us. With your loyalty, we can keep producing these podcasts and bringing you the world's best fly fishing gear. So shop smart and support the fly shop that supports you.
And so pretty simple kind of setup, really, especially for the shore-based fishermen, where it is just the floating line and a sink tip line. That's
what I use. Look, I combine that with – I fish pretty heavy when I'm pulling because the takes can be quite savage.
Yeah.
So I use a 9-foot tapered leader down to 2X, and then I'll have about 5 feet of 2X fluorocarbon running off that. So I've got a dropper,
yeah,
and I've got a point fly. Right. And they're about 5 feet apart. And I go with the tapered leader for the same reason as I'm using the shorter rod, because I can deliver that across or into the wind.
Yeah. And you wouldn't reduce the length of that 9 foot tapered leader a bit to...
You could a bit, but no, I don't.
Yeah.
I just run 9 foot. I find I can handle...
You can handle 9 feet?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I'm only fishing the two flies.
Yeah.
When I'm fishing bigger flies, so pulling style flies, nowadays I only fish two.
So that's one fly at 9 feet and another fly at 14 feet.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Okay. If I'm fishing out of the boat, I just go a level cast, 2X, 7 feet to the first dropper, 7 feet to the point.
Right. Okay.
Further apart.
Yeah.
But again, I can get away with that because I'm predominantly casting downwind.
Sure.
So the reason I keep the flies a bit tighter together, only 5 feet apart when off the bank, is because... If they were 7 feet apart, they would be quite hard to cast across the breeze or into the wind.
Yeah.
Downwind out of the boat, doesn't matter.
No worries.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
And the weight in the flies when you are setting up, what do you have more weight on the point fly, or do you chop and change that a bit? Do you find it actually affects how those flies swim by having a heavy one in the middle, say, or is it pretty much?
Yeah, my preference is to always have the weighted fly on the point.
Okay.
And then unweighted fly on the dropper, because as we mentioned with the plop, I'm looking for the... People forget, they think, hang on, I'm fishing at depth, but you're still looking for that quality of presentation.
Mm.
And that gives me a better quality of presentation. Now, occasionally I will fish, double weighted flies, but my preference is not to do that.
Right. Why would you ever fish two beadhead streamer patterns?
Basically, I don't much. But lots of people do.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the comp scene, lots of people do, but I don't.
Yeah.
So, for example, Little Pines, let's take as an example, Magoo-style flies work very well there.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have a black one on the point with a bead, and then on the dropper, I'll tie one but without a bead.
Yeah.
Because I want the olive one. For some reason, in Little Pine, that olive Magoo on the top dropper is the way to go.
Yeah.
But I just don't put a bead on it. So it presents better, it's easier to cast, it just, the whole thing feels better.
Yeah.
Rather than that clunk clunk of having those two beads. And I think the other thing is too, we talked about the plop.
Mm.
You get a plop from the bead. What about a plop plop?
Mm.
Yeah, that potentially can spook a fish rather than just a nice enticing little plop.
Yeah. Just before we finish off on fly lines, there's a lot of different sink rates. Are you carrying basically all of them?
Yeah, I do, but you don't have to.
Yeah.
Really. The ones that you would want to always have are an intermediate, a DI3 and a DI5.
Right.
That will get you out of most situations.
Yeah.
But, I've got all the ones in between and that many, it's ridiculous, really, but that's what you would want. Those three, the ones you should definitely have in your bag.
Yeah, and we covered lock-style fishing with you in a prior episode. You made it quite clear, lock-style fishing, we're fishing the top of the water column, and that's where just the floating line and the hover line.
The hover line,
Are the sort of two main ones that you'd select for that style of fishing. Would you ever fish a hover line with your streamers?
Oh, yes, you could. If the fish were sitting really high in the water, I would fish a hover line.
Okay.
Yeah, with them. If they're high in the water and moving a lot, and I still wanted to fish streamers, I'd probably fish a floater because I mentioned I can lift that off the water to cover a fish.
Yep.
Which I can't do with a fly line that's sunk, irrespective of whether it's sunk down a metre or 2 metres in the water or whether it's in the first foot of water, it's still sunk. So you've got to pull that all the way in to make a recast.
Okay.
But that would just depend on what's happening on the day. But certainly... You can certainly fish them off floaters as well, but more often you're going to be using an intermediate or something faster.
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. So, we've covered a lot there, but let's just talk maybe a bit about some of the waters that are very productive in terms of streamer fishing.
Look, I suppose it's, for a start, you need a bit of depth, right? Normally, streamer fishing isn't going to work in the shallow margins as it is where you've got a bit of depth, because there's too much weed and stuff. You're getting tangled up in it all the time. So more of a static style presentation is going to work in really shallow water.
Yeah.
So, for example, if we mention Little Pine Lagoon, which a lot of anglers would know, I'm seldom fishing streamers off the bank. Right, because, again, it's shallow, isn't it? We're out in the boat early season. That's a different situation altogether. You can definitely fish streamers out there because you've got that bit of depth to work with. So really that's the main decider for me as to whether I would fish streamers or not. It's whether I can.
Yeah, sure. So if it's more open water, has a little bit of depth to it, that's the prerequisite.
That's streamer fishing.
Yeah.
And, of course, the other thing is will be the time of the year too. We've sort of mentioned that, but the...
When is the windows? Like, I mean, presumably fish will eat a streamer all through the year, right?
100%. It can be any time of the year. I've had amazing fishing, again, on Little Pine, pulling streamers in February, right? But the weather was terrible. Right. So there weren't any hatches. It was freezing cold. It was streamer weather. You know, the fish weren't coming up because there was no bugs. So if there's no fish on top, you go down to where the fish are because the fish will be looking down, not looking up.
Sure.
But definitely, you know, late season, early season, that's when pulling streamer style flies on our lakes is probably at its best. You know, if you go out for the opening weekend in Tasmania, you're going to be pulling a sinking line and you're going to be pulling marabou. And that's how you're going to, and you'll potentially get some really good fishing.
Yeah.
But that's the way to fish. Where if you're going out there tweaking nymphs and whatever, you're not going to do anywhere near as well.
Yeah. Sure. Okay. It seems to me a lot of people are either the kind of people that do pull streamers or they fish more static methods like indicator nymphing or what have you.
Yeah.
Do you ever fish a static approach over pulling marabou approach during those times when there is basically nothing happening?
At a personal level, I'm more inclined to pull than I am to fish static, and that's because of I'm just too impatient.
Yeah.
I mean, just sitting there looking at a indicator, I can't do that.
They come in lots of different colours, though.
They do. There's some real flash ones out there now. But for me, so fishing the bung, as we would call it, it doesn't rock my world. Yeah. I know people do it, and we guide that way a lot. It can be very effective, and particularly if you've got people who are more challenged with their casting, et cetera, fishing an indicator is a very valid and effective way to go.
Okay.
But at a personal level, I'm more inclined to be more active in my fishing, and I'd be more inclined to pull than fish the bung.
Yeah.
But, of course, one of the things you've got to be able to do if you are pulling is you've got to be a good caster. Because you've got to cast a long enough line to be able to work those flies. If you can only cast a short line, you're really limited in your ability to be able to work those flies in the water. So you need to be casting long, basically, you're covering more water that way.
Yeah, which is great practice for people, isn't it?
Well, it is.
You know, if you go out and make 1,000 casts, you're going to progress as a caster.
You are. So, you're actually working pretty hard because you're making a lot of casts. You have probably a cast every 30 seconds, something like that. In fact, it could be even more than that. So you're making a lot of casts in the day. And, again, getting back to it, that's why I use 6-weight rods. Used to use a 7-weight rod. My own can't cope with that anymore. I use a 6-weight rod, and I find that's the best all-round weight for me.
Yeah, not to mention, you know, the modern day 6-weight is a beautiful thing. It's kind of doing everything a 7-weight can do plus everything a 5-weight can do.
Exactly. Which, you know, if I went back 20 years ago, my 6-weight does what I used to do with a 7-weight.
Your home water, Lake Wendouree, it's in such great shape at the moment. When you look at our, you know, Western District lakes, is it a good stream of water? Is it one of your preferred stream of waters?
I was out there yesterday. So I spent about an hour and a half in the water, picked up 3 fish. One was an orange beater magoo, and the other one was basically a blob. It was a big blob on the top dropper.
Yeah.
In the end, I came off, though, because it was too wet and cold. But the fish were there, and there was some really nice fishing amongst them too.
That's great.
And interestingly, just thinking about, one took on the drop, another took on the hang, and another one took on the pull.
Wow.
So three of those stages.
Yeah.
Ones on the hang are always very satisfying.
Oh,
you
yeah.
hang it and you go, yeah, there she is.
Yeah.
Very satisfying yeah. to catch them that way.
Is that because in your mind's eye, you're picturing that fish kind of staring at the fly?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, you've deliberately done something.
Yeah.
And it's worked.
Yeah, it's enticing.
It's great. I know what I'm teaching people and I say, okay, now you've got to hang. And the first fish they get on the hand, they go, oh, it worked.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. It actually worked. And it does.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's always good to see people's faces that when they get that first one on the hang.
Absolutely.
It's a bit like their first fish in a blob. They can't believe it.
Yeah, no, that's a hard one to get your head around, isn't it? Let's talk a bit more about the flies. So you said there before pulling Marabou style flies,
yeah,
woolly bugger variants, a big part of your streamer fly box.
They are. So most of the flies I'd be fishing on the point would normally have a bead on them. That bead will be a brass bead, maybe in different colours. But I don't like tungsten beads.
Yeah,
because tungsten beads will cause the fly to sink at a certain rate, i.e. faster, where if I've got a brass bead, I can actually control the fly better.
You know,
if I want it to go down further in the water column, I just leave it longer, right? Where a brass bead, or sorry, the tungsten bead, because it goes down faster, it forces me to fish at a certain rate.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So that's why I use brass for number two. But then they'll have most of the time I'm using a fairly short bodied or length of hook.
Yeah.
Because I want most of the length to be in the marabou tail.
Just for movement?
For movement.
Yeah.
You get a lot of movement in the marabou tail.
Yeah.
Therefore, the shorter body. So I don't really use woolly bugger style flies. It's more magoo, you know, tadpole style flies. So if you looked in my box, they're all pretty much on shortish length of hooks, maximum length of tail.
Do you ever find you get short takes because of those long tails, or is that just
I reckon that's a pollen.
Yeah, yeah,
I really do.
When they want it, they're engulfing the whole thing.
Correct. If you're missing fish, there's a couple of reasons going on. One, you may not have been in touch, right? But the other thing is sometimes the fish just aren't in the mood. And they'll knock it, they'll hit it, you know, you will foul hook them or whatever, because they're just not taking the fly well.
Yeah.
They're not coming up and nibbling on the tail, right? No. They're just, you know, you just missed it. Yeah. And the fish aren't taking, you know.
Especially with the speed of the retrieve, I just don't think they'd have the opportunity to, as you put it, nibble the tail of the fly.
No. So, yeah, personally, I reckon that's bunkum. I have maximum amount of movement in it.
Yeah. The blob you mentioned there, I feel like we could probably have a whole, you know, podcast episode on fishing blobs.
Blobs, yeah.
But do you just incorporate it into everything we've discussed? It's just another fly that you fish, you know, quite a lot pulling?
It is.
Yep.
Again, depending on the time of the year. So late season, early season, I'll always have a blob on because it feeds into that aggressive nature of the fish. People say they think they're fish eggs or whatever. No. What it is they see them.
Yeah.
They're right in their face. They see them. That's why the fish take them.
Yeah.
They don't think it's anything.
Yeah.
It's just got their, you know, their inquisitive nature, their aggressive nature, and that's why they whack them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So
it just none of it stands to reason, really, does it? When you look at a blob, you're like, this round thing of a bright colour moving through the water at speed, one earth.
Yep.
But as you put it, it's getting that aggressive response of the fish.
Yeah, and remember, the fish aren't rocket science. I mean,
are you sure about that?
Yeah.
We do have trouble catching them.
We do at times. It's not because they're outthinking us, right? They're outbehaving us in a lot of ways, but they're not outthinking us. I mean, one of the best-selling Tassie Devils for the lure trollers is a bright pink one.
Yeah.
Tells you something, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
But there are some days where the fish, don't want that bright stuff, and then you will go for a more subtle approach too. But I'll be top droppers. I'm using blobs. I'm using sparklers too.
Oh, yeah.
Sparklers can be very good at times. But again, got to be fish fast though. Really fast for sparklers.
Okay.
Cat's whisker, which is a fly that's not used. You don't see it used in Australia a lot, but you'll see it used in the UK heat.
For sure, yeah.
A very effective
in that
light.
Traditional colour scheme with the chartreuse body and the white marabou.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah,
wow.
But I time mine actually more Magoo style.
Yep.
Right, rather than the overwing.
Yeah, okay. So no overwing whatsoever.
No. Yeah. No. Yeah, so the reason they do the overwing in the UK is because they're fishing to what they call their international rules, which actually controls the length of the fly.
Right.
That's what drives that. We don't have to worry about that. We can fish a longer fly as we like.
Yeah.
So I fish it that way. I get maximum movement that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
But those sort of things. But if the fish are sort of, I suppose, in a more subtle way, like the humble Tom Jones, really good top dropper fly.
Yeah.
It looks like a damsel, it looks like a little nymph, looks like a stick cast, could be any sort of things. But if the fish are sort of not in that really aggressive mood, you might just make it a bit more subtle on the dropper. And that's one of the flies that I would automatically turn to would be a Tom Jones on the dropper.
Sure.
Yeah.
When you see fish smelting, you know, visibly you're seeing fish feeding, are you still just pulling when that's happening, or are you changing your fishing up to a more targeted approach?
More targeted. And that's where I would fish with a floating line.
Right.
Right? Because, again, I can lift the line off the water really fast to reposition to cover that fish.
Yeah.
So it's probably still fish two flies. Yeah, it could be something like a Zonkery-style fly, a Green Machine, for example. Mm-hmm. Then with, say, a Tom Jones, that combination would be a pretty good one to target smelting fish with.
Yeah.
But knowing that you've got to be out fishing as fast as possible.
Mm.
Yeah. Quicker to the fish, the better.
Mm.
Yeah.
What do you think is, you know, some days are obviously very productive on the streamer. It just seems like just about every fish in the lake is into it.
Mm.
What are the driving factors behind that, do you think, in theory?
Look, there's a lot of things about fish behaviour that, you know, we don't understand.
Mm.
And possibly that's one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... And we can't see what's going on under the water and why they're just onto it one day and why they're not onto it another. I don't know. I know people will talk about barometric pressure and all sorts of stuff. I've never paid a lot of attention to that because I go fishing when I can go fishing.
Mm.
But sometimes you just have to say, I don't know. And I know when I'm guiding, that's when clients will often ask me, they'll say, well, why is this happening? And you know what? I'll just say, sometimes I don't know.
But you're the expert. You're supposed to know.
I'm supposed to know, but there are things we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. But the good thing is when they are taking them, it's nice when you've got the streamer on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. When it's on, do you find that pretty much everything is working, or is there still that extra, 1%, but you can realistically double your catch rate because you are doing something that has keyed in completely on what's happening?
Definitely. When they're on, yes. But I've been cleaned up in a boat, right, because I've had the wrong line on.
Mm.
I remember one time actually being cleaned up on Woods Lake. The bloke was beside me, was fishing a DI-4 and I was fishing a DI-3. I actually didn't have a DI-4 on me, and he caught three or four fish to my every one.
Yeah.
But that was the difference, his line.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, in fact, I was a more experienced angler than he was, right? But he cleaned me up that day.
Yeah.
And I've certainly seen the same thing sometimes with flies. Now, I'm not a silver bullet style fly sort of fisherman, if that makes sense. But for example, if you're on Lake Wendouree, you want to be fishing coral colours.
Mm.
If you're fishing Lake Fines, you want to be on Fluor Orange.
Mm.
Why the difference? I don't know. But I can tell you, Wendouree coral is the go. Fines, Fluor Orange. It's just that difference from water to water. So they do have their nuances.
Yeah.
And definitely changes in technique, and particularly the behaviour of that line, whether it be a sweep or a DC, and the rate at which it's sinking can be very important at times.
Yeah.
And have a big impact on your catch rate.
Yeah, okay. Those Grampians Lakes, is that a favourite sort of area for you for fishing streamers through winter and the shoulder?
Not as much, because Fines just hasn't been fishing very well.
Right.
Yeah. Although the Burrup fly fishers were there on the weekend, and I believe they had some reasonably good fishing. So,
okay.
And I tend to get a bit lazy because Lake Wendouree is right on my doorstep, and it's such a good fishery.
Yeah.
So I'm on this a lot.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Mm.
What haven't we covered there? There was one thing that did pop into my mind a minute ago, and I've just got mental blank. Getting old.
I'm trying to think. Well, we've covered off the gear. I was trying, one thing I didn't touch on was reels.
Yeah.
And look, I'm very lucky. I've got a great selection of spare spools that mm-hmm. clip on, but certainly you want reels where the they're really quick to change spools, because then you're more inclined to do it.
Sure.
Yeah, and really, if you're thinking about it, you should be doing it. So that's what I always do with my fly fishing. If I'm thinking it, do it.
Yeah.
Right? So ones that are easy to change the spools on, that's good. That means you can change between the different sink rates very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Or think about if, and particularly if budget is an issue, the cassette-style reels are very handy because, okay, they're not as quick, but it means that on a budget, you can actually have quite a few cassettes and it's not costing you that spare spool every time, which can get pretty exy. So they're the two things to keep in mind. If you're just a recreational-style angler, I'd be saying, well, cassettes are probably a good way to go.
Yeah, they all seem to come with three spools, which for the most part is a good
pretty
base.
Good.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
But if you're heavily into comp, well, you're probably going to go for the spare spools because it's just quicker.
Oh, yeah. And that's where efficiency just matters so much.
It does, yeah.
Do you think that the comp scene, we have to thank a lot for that development in pulling flies over the last sort of decade?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. In fact, I'll probably take credit for bringing the first blobs and sparklers back to Australia. I've been a fishing comp in the UK. Ian Barr had been teaching us how to fish with these things, there's a real lake specialist over there.
Yeah.
And so I came back to Wenderee and guess what? I've got blobs and sparklers. and I still remember thinking, oh, well, I'll chuck these on, and maybe some of these recent stock rainbows will grab them. First cast.
Wow. Yeah.
Roly-poly, that was the other thing, roly-poly. I'm roly-polying this back. I've got a blob and a sparkler on and I'm straight into a fish. And I thought, whoa, how good is this? This is going to be one of these silly rainbows. It was a brown.
On everything.
Yeah, exactly. So bringing that stuff back, certainly it's been through that comp scene. Same with the dabblers and all sorts of stuff. Yeah, claret dabblers, that all came back from when we first went to Ireland and got exposed to them.
Yeah, yeah. And the drogue a fairly important part of the boating?
It is. Yeah, drogues are very important for when you're boat fishing, because if you can't control that drift of the boat, couple of things are going to happen. One, you're going to be covering water just too fast, right? But you're not going to be in contact. So we've talked about the importance of being in contact on the drop, also on the hang. If the boat's drifting really fast, it's really hard to stay in contact on those. And, that's where the drogue comes into play.
Right.
In fact, I'd almost, if I didn't have a drogue and it was a windy day, like yesterday was quite windy on Lake Wenderee, I think I wouldn't even be bothered going out.
Yeah.
Because you'd just be restricting your ability to fish well.
You'd be on top of your flies before you've had a chance to retrieve them.
Correct.
Yeah
correct. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's awesome, Craig. Thank you so much for sitting down with us and talking about pulling flies or streamer fishing.
Fishing the dark side.
Yes. Yeah. It's always been something I've enjoyed. I think I do like the process of just casting a fly rod. So fishing next to Jim Allen, who's got the indicator out and intently watching it. For me, I was bored shitless with that too, mate. That makes two of us.
For me, I can't do it. But what they call it? The tug is the drug.
Yes.
So, there you go.
It is. Yeah. No, there's obviously a lot to it. And I think that's the beauty of it, isn't it? It's not just go out there and smash it all the time. You don't stop learning with this stuff. So, hats off to the good streamer fishermen, because there is a lot to do it properly and do it well.
So, of course, we're at that time of the year. It's really, if you're out in the lakes at the moment, that's the way to fish.
That's it, yeah. Apart from smelters this time of year, is there anything that you're scanning for during days on the water, or is it?
Yeah, look, obviously midge activity. I mean, we're really the mayfly are finished now. So you will get midge activity, particularly of an evening. That's something to keep your eye open for. The little gambrusia, we've talked about smelt feeders, but as the water levels have dropped and it's getting colder, therefore those gambrusia, which during summer would have been up in the shallows and the weeds and the trout couldn't get to them. Now they're actually becoming accessible to the trout. So the trout will swim along margins actively hunting those.
Okay.
So I'll look for that and look for weed lines and whatever where the fish will be swimming along. And really, yeah, they'd be the main things, I suppose, we're looking for at this time of the year. Okay. It's a bit more limited as things get colder, but that's what we keep an eye open for.
Yeah, so good, isn't it? You know, just to be scanning, always on the lookout for any sign of activity, but at the same time, you'll be, you know, well-entertained casting streamers around. And with the variety of streamers, sync rates in lines, there's a lot you can do to change the scorecard in your direction.
Most definitely. Yeah.
No, that's great, Craig. Thank you so much for sitting down with us, mate. It's great to get you back on the podcast.
My pleasure, Andrew.
Cheers, man.
Tight lines.